You're listening to Beyond the Measure, Episode 11. Listen as I, a young composer, and my wife, a young choir director, interview other music educators in order to gain insight into their own success in the classroom. We have a lot to learn, and we want you to learn with us. No matter your age, ensemble, or experience, this is the ideal podcast for music educators, composers, and students alike. So join us as we go beyond the measure. Hey guys, welcome back to the next episode of Beyond the Measure. I am your host, Christian, here with my beautiful co-host.
Oh, stop it. It's Kara.
I was like, that's not your name. but welcome back. We are super excited to be back today recording another episode. We have a good friend of ours, Soraya Peters, here on the show. Soraya, thank you for coming today.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Kara, do you want to tell everybody how we know Soraya or how long we have known Soraya? We've done a lot of fun stuff with Soraya in the
yes.
past.
Yes. So we know Soraya from our time at Hardin-Simmons. You're 2 years older than us.
Yes.
Yeah. So whenever we were freshmen, you were a junior. That's math. Yeah. And so we were in concert choir together, and we've been on lots of trips, lots of performances together, mm-hmm. and that's kind of how we know her.
Yeah.
That's right. And so, yeah. And I think you graduated, you like spent like an extra semester or something until you graduated, right?
Yeah. Because I was a music ed mm-hmm. major and that's already 4.5 years and I didn't come in with any college credit. So I just stayed the full course.
Yeah. And that's pretty normal. But I was just going to say that was kind of nice because we got an extra semester with you than we normally would have.
That's so, true.
Soraya, you can tell us a little bit more about kind of everything you've done and kind of what you've done on the music side of things. But I'll kind of, as a preview, I'll say Soraya was the director of Upbeat 1 year, which was a student-led a cappella group. And that's something that happened at Hardin-Simmons that we were a part of. And then she is now the director of Backbeat.
I did not choose the name.
Yeah, which y'all have heard us mention a few times already on the show. And she does a few other things around the area as well.
Just a few.
So you'll hear more about that in a bit. But Soraya, if you could go ahead and go in depth of however much you want, but just kind of, you know, how did you come to do music? What made you want to do that? Mm-hmm. And just tell us your story.
Yeah. So I actually came prepared. I typed things out because I have horrible memory.
Same here.
And being a musician, I have a lot of theater background, voice and choir. And for some odd reason, my brain splits them up into like three different parts. Yeah. And I only talk about one and I forget that the others intersect. Mm-hmm. The beginning. So I kind of grew up in a non-musical family. I know that probably doesn't make any sense, but they didn't major in music or anything like that. But we loved listening to music all the time. My parents would sing and my sister would sing too. My family is originally from Trinidad and Tobago, and there's a lot of Indian influence there. So I grew up watching Bollywood movies as a kid, which that really influenced my desire for music. And that's also how I learned how to read, because I'd have to read the subtitles. Yeah. But it was something that I thoroughly enjoyed. And my sister did choir and theater growing up. And so it was really cool to watch her. And it was kind of like a, you know, real life Bollywood film, even though it wasn't that great. So my junior high year is when I really started getting into choir. That's where I met Cindy Davenport and Karen Iser. And then I was introduced to the junior high all region and UIL, and I did all of that stuff. And then that's my eighth grade year is whenever I got introduced into theater. So that was like a pretty big moment in my life, because that's when those three things started coming together a little bit. So my freshman year of high school is when a lot of things started to kind of come in. That's when I went to Hardin-Simmons choir camp, and that's where I met Dee Romines, Clell Wright, Melody Rich, Lynette Chambers, all those amazing people. And that's also when I started taking voice lessons with Christopher Hollingsworth. Cindy Davenport had spoken with me, and she said, "I think you should take voice lessons." And I was almost offended because I didn't know what that meant at the time. Yeah. Like, what do you mean I need voice lessons? But that's a good thing for someone to tell you. Yeah. And so I started working with him then. And freshman year is also when I was in my first musical at Clyde, and that's when they did Beauty and the Beast, and then I did one act. So that really started to define who I was at that point in time. And then throughout the rest of my time at high school, I just continued to be in musicals and plays, and I continued with voice lessons and continued with All Region and or All State. And my senior year is when I actually made the inaugural small school All State choir, which was conducted by Z. Randall Stroop, and he is amazing. Yeah. So that really was important to me. And I decided to have a senior recital because I had friends in the Abilene schools that would do that. And so I talked to Dr. Hollingsworth and was like, I really want to do this. Mm-hmm. And no one in Clyde did that. That was not a thing. And so we managed to pull it together, and I had it at the Woodward Dallas Recital Hall. And that's where I met Abigail Payne. And she just played for some random senior girl that she had never met before. We literally met the day before and then put that recital together. And then that's whenever I was thinking about college, and I had a dilemma, and this is a dilemma I've always had, even now, is I love performing. I love teaching. I did not know what to do about it. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I wanted to go to HSU because, I wanted to continue my education with Dr. Hollingsworth, and I loved the faculty there, and it really just didn't seem like a question of where I would go. And I only applied there. And so I auditioned for both the music education department and the musical theater department. And I got accepted into both, the same amount of scholarship into both. And I ultimately went with the music education route because I knew that I didn't need a degree to perform, and I would always be employable. And it was a safer route for me to go that way. And so that's when I have my experience with college. Freshman year, I call it the year of sadness because I thought that going the music education route, I was not allowed to do theater anymore because I thought I just needed to focus on music. So I only did choir. I did Nats, which that was more of a performing thing kind of, but it wasn't very satisfying because it's just you're singing, you know, a classical song. And like I even binge watched all of Grey's Anatomy at that point in time, just within 2 months, because I had no, I was like, I had all this time in the world. I was so used to being super busy, and I didn't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
And so sophomore year, I remember at Nats, I was talking with Dr. Hollingsworth, and he had asked me if I was going to do, if I was going to audition for Godspell. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And he said, well, I strongly encourage you do that. And we all know his I strongly encourage is like, you have to do this.
Yeah.
And so this was a big moment in my life because I was so anxious. I had severe anxiety about the idea of auditioning for this musical. And you would think that I wouldn't because I did it a lot in high school. And I had that experience. I got 5 Best Actress Awards in one act. Like, I knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't done it for over a year, and I saw the talent that was at HSU, and I didn't think that I would measure up to that. I just didn't feel like I was worth being on stage with all those incredibly talented people. So I remember I was staring at the audition form, and I was crying. I was so – I could not sign my name on that paper. And I sat there for about an hour. I had different friends come up to me, like Riley Arnold and Dom Gordon and Michael Kelly. And they're just trying to like talk me off the ledge. Be like, it's okay. Just sign your name. If you don't get in it, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And so I did. And it was the best decision I made because I got in it. I played, obviously in that show, you play yourself. But I was the one who sang Bless the Lord, which is like my favorite song. I think I oversang it too many times in college. But so
did you sing it at your senior recital?
I did,
right?
Sing at my senior recital, yeah. And you guys sang it. Yes. Yeah, it was my encore piece. But it was just a pivotal moment because then that got me performing again. And then the rest of my college career, I realized I perform really well just under pressure and just super busy. You know, in high school, I was an all A student. And then freshman year of college, I did not care. Like, I got B's, which that is not me. But then as soon as I started performing and my schedule was stacked, I got all A's again. I was like, I don't know what's happening, but this is just how I operate. So at that point, I did the musicals at HSU, the operas. I even did a couple community plays and shows and music directed upbeat somehow. And was vice president membership of SAI at the same time. And I did everything and anything. Oh, music directing over at Clyde High School. Yep. And I also worked. So it was just a lot that I did. And then I had to student teach. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I do not want to be in the classroom. And I knew that I wanted to impact students' lives because obviously I have teachers that played a vital role in my life because otherwise I wouldn't be where I am today. And I did well student teaching and I knew I would be a good teacher. I worked with Kara Neiser and Josh Westman at Cooper High School and then Lindsay Ransford over at Craig. And I learned some valuable lessons with them. And it was something that Ms. Neiser said to me that really made me decide what I wanted to do. She also sang a lot growing up, and she told Josh and I that she had made a decision to turn her back to the audience, which I thought about that. And immediately my thought was, absolutely not. Like, that was not for me. But then I thought about it some more and realized, no, that I feel like I can offer more being in front of the conductor stand as opposed to being behind. And that's why I did not want to be a choir teacher. And even though I do music direct and I do teach voice lessons, that's still very different. Yeah. It's more like voice lessons one-on-one or musical theater, music directing that I get to bring in my theater experience, which is a lot of fun. And so I was like, yeah, that I'm not going to be in the classroom. And I had a big revelation after I graduated because I knew I needed a job. At this point, I had been working at Blake Full & Wider, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Clyde. I was part-time. I was just a file clerk. But I needed a job. It's like, I don't know what I'm going to do because I don't want to teach. And but I want to do something that's music related. And I remember praying in my car, and because that's usually when I have my prayer time. And I just said, God, I need a job to where it's music related and that I'm going to be happy and make a difference. And just this thought of the Abilene Philharmonic came into my head. I never thought of that as a job. I didn't even know there was an office with staff. I just thought it was the orchestra.
Yeah.
So I texted Abigail that night and said, do you guys have any openings? And she said, actually, I was going to recommend you for this position. And so she texted Kevin Smith that night. And this was during Christmas time. So he was already gone for vacation. But by the time that he got back, I interviewed with him and I immediately was hired. And I started like that next day. And I just started as an office assistant, just doing random stuff here and there. And they didn't have a box office person. So then I eventually evolved into that role. And so that is my job now is I'm the box office supervisor for the Abilene Philharmonic. And I do a lot with ticketing software and marketing and advertising and fundraising, nothing that I went to school for. So that was really nice. And then Abigail, again, who has just continued to play a big role in my life, talked to me and said, because now at this point, she's the executive director of Chorus Abilene. And I've known her throughout different points in my life, from, you know, her being the pianist at my senior recital in high school, then her being my pianist in college, and then working at the Abilene Philharmonic and now Chorus Abilene. And she said, I want to grow Chorus Abilene, but I don't know how, but I think I want to do like an a cappella group. And I know that you music directed Upbeat at HSU. So do you think this is something that you would be interested in? And I said, sure. Yeah, why not? This was during COVID. I didn't think it would actually happen. And I thought I had a lot more time to think about it. And then next thing I realized, that time was approaching. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. I have to really start planning this. I had no idea what it was going to look like. And so I, you know, we auditioned. Backbeat started with 9 members in the fall, and then we re-auditioned in the spring and gained more members and had 15, which I thought was incredible with the growth. It's been received really, really well. And now I'm in the process of planning this next season on top of planning next season for the APO. And I still somehow teach voice lessons at the same time. And the one thing I did give up, though, is music directing at Clyde because I had to stop. It just something had to go. And Yeah, so that's just what I'm doing. Oh, I'm currently in the McMurray's production of Chicago, which Brady McNeil is the music director of. And yeah, so that's kind of where I am right now. It's a lot, but that's just who I am.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I think there's never been a time where we like known you and you weren't like not busy.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah,
I've tried.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, one of the big things that I thought when just kind of as you were talking through all of that is I think it's worth mentioning that, and we kind of talked about this with Travis in last week's episode, but you mentioned how you realized you didn't want to be in the classroom,
right,
but you still want to impact students' lives,
right,
you know, through performing and just through music. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth mentioning that music educator does not mean music teacher in the classroom, right? Because you can still be a music educator even if you're not teaching a choir or a band or, mm-hmm, you know, in, you know, K through 12 college classes. And you've been able to do a good variety of all that.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of where I've come along. I did. If you were to ask me, you know, 15-year-old Soraya where she would see herself, this would not be the answer, because it seemed too big at the time for me to even think about, you know, oh my gosh, I can perform and teach and get to do all this fun stuff at the same time. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. And yes, I'm tired, but it's worth it, you know? Yeah. And I even forgot to mention, I'm still focused on my own singing. Like, I've been taking voice lessons for the past, what year is it, 2022, for the past two to three years. Mm-hmm. And I'm even planning on having another recital in November. So I know that I personally want to keep growing as a vocalist, which I think is extremely important, being a director, being a teacher, a voice teacher, and also in music directing. You know, I feel like if you're going to teach, I need to continue to learn, because I just want to keep growing. So,
yeah, for sure. So let's say there is someone listening to this right now, and maybe someone that's on the younger side, whether they're in high school or still in college, and they're kind of unsure if they want to go more the performance route or the music education route.
Right.
Maybe they really like to perform, but they're kind of thinking, oh, but maybe I should try to do more teaching. You know, what do you, and I think I kind of asked this to Travis last week, but what do you think is kind of a good way to kind of go about figuring out what's the best kind of best path for that? Someone that's really passionate about performing, but they're not sure if like they should go full on for that. Cause, right, cause you mentioned you did music ed cause you wanted to be employable, that kind of thing. Like, what do you think is the best way to kind of think through that process and kind of figure all that out? Cause I know that takes a long time and college is a good time to do that, but. I know it's a broad question, but
no, I think the first thing is you need to find a good school. That is the first step. Because I, at the time when I went to HSU, you know, the programs were doing super, super well, and you could be a music education major and do shows. Mm-hmm. The theater and music department worked hand in hand like that. And not a lot of colleges do that.
Yeah.
So if you want to be an ed major or music business or something along those lines, but still perform, then I highly recommend researching schools that allow you to do both. Mm-hmm. Because that was extremely beneficial for me. I'm really, really happy about my choice being a music ed major, because I learned a lot of good stuff and I still utilize those skills to this day. And now I just utilize performing as a hobby and just something that I thoroughly enjoy doing. And it still makes me feel like myself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just do your research. If you're wanting to go to school for music, figure out the school that will be best for you, that you can do those things in tandem. And then, you know, just you have, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work to major in something and perform. You know, music ed is a huge class load.
And like the one time I did, what's it called?
The Merry Widow?
No, not even the Merry Widow.
Secret Garden.
The Secret Garden. I was like, why did I do this?
Yeah.
I mean, it was really fun and I got to see like a different, like perspective of like performing and everything, but doing that, I was like, yeah, this is not for me. Yeah. I will just be in the audience appreciating it or being behind the scenes. But it was hard, like just going to rehearsals, and sometimes like I wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
But I didn't I couldn't do homework or anything. I just had to just stay there, and it is time consuming, but it's worth it if that's like if you're trying to figure out what you want to do.
I remember the spring semester of like my technical senior year, like this was the semester before I student taught, and I was preparing for my senior recital. I was in Little Women and I was in The Merry Widow. And during that Christmas break, I had to memorize my lines for both shows. So I didn't really have a break, and also do my program notes and everything for my recital. So that whole semester, I was doing three different things at the same time, on top of school, on top of work, and then all the other things I was doing. So if it's something you want to do, I definitely think, you know, you have to work at it, and you have to, if you're going to do it, you have to go all in. But also be very aware of not overcommitting yourself, because that's very hard.
So with all that being said, it's like you can definitely do both, but it's a lot.
It is.
And so you just need to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
That's something that, like, I mean, I didn't even major in music ed, and I mean, no college degree is, you know, easy, but you know, even as like a composition major, I mean, that's not as hefty as music ed. And I was still stressed out being in like Merry Widow. And I was just like,
we both had just like very small roles. And we were just like,
this is not me, but
I can't handle it.
Well, maybe that's something we can actually talk about. Is so you've done so many different things, a lot of them at the same time overlapping.
Right.
We've already said that you're a super busy person. So like, what do you do to kind of do all of that, like tools and kind of like planning out everything, and just like, how do you balance everything you're doing at the same time? Or maybe you're thinking, oh, I don't balance it.
You know, that's a very good question.
Or like, how has, like, whenever you started officially being busy, like, how has that evolved into like your schedule now? Like,
so in college, I have no idea how I balanced everything. I look back at that time in my life, I'm like, how did I do that? I didn't really use a planner because I'm horrible at that, and I just somehow remembered everything. But as an adult, I'm still figuring it out, but I make sure to put things down in my calendar, and I live by that thing now. But I don't know. It's still really, really hard to balance, because sometimes I put all of those things in the forefront and I put myself last, which can be very detrimental to just my overall health. And that's something that I'm still actively working on. I'm trying to carve out some time for myself. But I will say, if anything, being a music ed major definitely taught me some skills in terms of just managing my time. Because if, you know, the amount of classwork that we have to do, and we have to plan this recital, and we have to be in choir, and we have to do voice, and it's just a lot that we have to juggle in general. And I feel like I gained a lot of skills from that time in my life to where I can handle it now. If I didn't do any of that, I would be so overwhelmed. But now I look at my schedule and I'm just like, oh, yep, that is what it is. It's what it's always been. But yeah, I don't really have a good answer into how I do it. Sure. It's just what I've been doing for so long. But I guess for someone who's never done it before, just really try to be organized as you possibly can. Working at the APO has taught me how to be organized, because I have all these deadlines I have to make, and I have to be just prepared all the time. But really look at how much you can handle, and actively plan in your schedule when you can do X, Y, and Z, but also make sure and plan things for yourself. Make sure that you don't plan things over the weekends. Like, this whole last year I was teaching voice lessons on Sundays, and I would just had Saturdays sometimes, not all the time, because I'd have a concert with chorus or with APO, and then I would have voice lessons the next day. And so I was like, something's got to give. I can't do that anymore. So a lot of it's going to be trial and error, but look at what you can handle, plan accordingly, and just adjust, always adjust. So
yeah, that's something that's so important, is finding the time to rest.
Right.
Yeah. And that's like a question that I have for you, because like my first year of teaching, it was really hard. Like I would come home, and I'm sure whenever you come home from work or rehearsals, like you're just dead tired and like don't want to do anything. But you know, there's those things that you have to do around the house or like cook dinner. And it was really hard to do that whenever you come home exhausted and like expending all this energy with your students and then have none of it whenever you get home. And so I didn't like have a lot of good habits the whole year. Like I would just come home, go to bed. I wouldn't, we ate out like more than ever last year because we were so busy and or tired. And I was like, I don't want to cook. It's going to take so much time. And I'm like this summer, now that we're not out of town, we were basically out of town like all last month. But I'm like trying to build habits that I can carry them into my next year, so it's not super hard. But like, are there any habits that you've tried to build for yourself to keep like you being restful and taking care of yourself?
Last year I knew I wanted to eat better, because like you had mentioned, like going out to eat all the time. And so I started cooking more. I had never really cooked before, and so I found a bunch of recipes and I realized, I like this. And it was nice to have about an hour of time of me just prepping and cooking and the smell and everything. It just, it took me away from just stress and work. And so what I did was I would meal prep, like on Mondays, I'd cook a bunch of food and meal prep it for that whole entire week. So every day I was eating like some home cooked meal, which would still make me feel better. I would try to just do the things that I enjoy. Like I tried working out a little bit and it was hard with my schedule, and that quickly, I gave up with that really fast. But this past year I've been doing a lot better. I started working with a personal trainer because I had someone to hold me accountable. And I was like, I know I'm paying you, so I have to show up. And it's been the best thing that I've done for myself. If anything, it has helped me in my day-to-day life in terms of motivation to do things, and it keeps me in the moment. And that's something that I've always been bad about, is because I'm constantly focused and stressing out about what's next. What do I have to do like in the next hour or tomorrow or this weekend? I'm never really like, oh, let me enjoy right now. And so working out has been really beneficial, because I'm in that moment for that 30 minutes. It's helped me with work, because it's been really stressful lately, and because we're looking at hiring a new executive director. So the staff is kind of wandering aimlessly without a boss right now. But there are just some times where it feels like too much. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to get all of this done. And then I leave work and I'm like, oh gosh, I still have to prep for Backbeat. I don't know what we're going to sing. I still have to learn my lines for Chicago. I don't know how I'm going to do any of this. And I just tell myself, okay, one moment at a time. And so when I'm at work, if I feel overwhelmed, I'm just going to say, okay, by the end of the day, I'm going to only get this, and this done. That if I can get all those things done, great. And if I can't get the rest, I'll take care of it tomorrow. Or I have about 30 minutes and let me listen to my lines like while I'm driving to driving home, or just trying to carve out certain moments in your life that, you know, if you come home, you're tired, you don't want to do the dishes can wait. You can do them tomorrow. You know, your mental health is important. Obviously it needs to get done at some point, but sometimes you just need some sleep. You need to eat some food. Just watch some TV and then you feel a little bit better. And then you can start taking care of those things. So I guess my advice is just think about what will work for you. Like for me, working out was the big influence, because time would stop for a little bit. And same thing when I would cook, time would stop. And I would feel so much better. I would show up to working out, because I have it right after my job, and I'm so stressed out. I have a headache. I'm like, I don't even want to do this. And then I do it and I leave and I feel so much better. And I'm like, I could take on the world right now. Like, throw whatever you can at me. So just find what makes you feel that way, and then just allow those lessons to kind of carry forth in your life and to be like, okay, this makes me feel good. This makes me feel good. So when I'm having a really bad day or really don't feel like doing this, let me go do those things that fill my cup. Mm-hmm. And then now I have enough room to do that other stuff.
Yeah. What makes you feel in the moment,
yeah,
in the present. And it's funny that we kind of talk about that because that's also like a part of rest, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even like if you're exercising, that's still a form of like mentally resting. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, right. But it's funny that we were talking about this because like this whole past week, that's been like the thing like on my mind. I feel like God's kind of like put on my heart is like, you need to find time to rest.
Right.
I've listened to like 2 sermons about it and listened to a podcast about it. And especially, and I think part of it's because kind of like what Kara mentioned, like it's the summer and it's supposed to be the restful time rejuvenating. And yet we ended up traveling like 6-7 weekends in a row. And like even going to Hawaii, like that was a really
fun thing, but it was pretty stressful.
It was still stressful in ways because you're doing all this stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And also like being rested, taking time at least once a week to just focus on resting, like Sabbath, right? Mm-hmm. That helps you do your work better,
right?
You know, when the time comes. But I actually kind of mentioned that in like my newsletter I just sent out the other day. Is I was like, you know, the best work comes from rest work.
Yeah, it does. It really does. I mean, you can't keep giving and giving because at the end of the day, being a musician, that's basically what you're doing. Yeah. It's just this constant outpour of emotion and feeling and just all this stuff, because that's what music is, you know? Mm-hmm. But then you run out and you don't have a lot to give to yourself anymore. And it can be exhausting. So take those moments of rest. This sounds so weird. I mentioned this before we even started. I watch YouTubers play video games. Oh, I know that's like the most random thing that I do.
I used to do it all the time.
But like it has nothing to do with music. Yeah. Absolutely nothing. And I will go home, immediately get into my pajamas. I will lay in bed with my cats and just watch a couple episodes. And I feel so much better.
Yep.
And because it's distracting, it makes me laugh a lot. Because sometimes our jobs, we're just so serious about things. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. And it's fun to laugh and just enjoy all of it because they're being dumb and just saying funny stuff. And, you know, And I feel rested. Then I go to bed and I feel better because I'm not thinking about work. Mm-hmm. And then I wake up. I'm like, all right, let's take a shower. Let's do this. And even in the moments where I don't want to, just like I need just one step at a time. Okay, just get up. Mm-hmm. You'll feel better after you take a shower. Okay, I took the shower. I still don't want to do anything. Okay, you'll feel better once you get dressed. It's just having that positive talk, that mental talk is important too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to put it in the context of like the classroom, since mm-hmm. that's what most of our listeners, the kind of scenario they're going to be in.
Right.
I mean, I just saw this from, you know, seeing you, Kara, do this for a year is like, it's so easy to constantly be having to, you know, plan for the next day, the next week, the next month, or just constantly thinking about your students and what they need and everything like that. And that's like, I mean, that's a good thing, right? I mean, that's something you should and need to do, but it's like on an airplane, whenever they're telling you the safety instructions and they say, if the oxygen masks come down, you put yours on first.
Right.
So that then you can help someone next to you.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you do it the other way around and it's not going to be, it ends up being worse for more people. So you got to put the oxygen mask on first.
No, that's true.
Be sure to do that.
That is true.
Let us take a quick break real quick so I can tell you a little bit about this podcast's primary sponsor, which is Christian Fortner Music. That's right, my own music business. This is the primary platform that I use to sell my music, and you can find it at www.christianfortner, that's Fortner, music.com. Now, you may be thinking, oh, I don't know, this guy is a young composer. Does he really know what he's doing? Well, to be honest, none of us composers really know what we're doing, if we're being completely honest with ourselves. But if you want to kind of get an idea of what my music might be like and if it might be a good fit for your ensemble, you can actually get a free copy of music from me.
That's right, a free piece of music. This isn't just a study score. This is a full score and parts that you can use for your ensemble to perform completely for free. And you can do that by signing up for my mailing list. So if you go to my website, Christian Fortner, that's F-O-R-T-N-E-R, music.com/mailings, you can sign up for my mailing list right there, and you'll get a link in your inbox where you can select a piece of music for either choir, string orchestra, or a band. And I should also mention that the choir piece, it can be either an SAB, SA, or TB version. So for any of you out there that are looking for SAB, SA, TB, specific voicings like that, then this might be a good opportunity for you. So yeah, that's about it. Again, if that's something you'd be interested in, just check it out on my website. And now we can get back to the episode.
I mean, I guess I have a question for you guys. This is a thought that comes up in my brain all the time. So being a musician, we have a timeline. It's the same thing every year. You know, you take a little break during the summer, but then you have a fall concert. Mm-hmm. Then you have a Christmas concert, sometimes a spring, and then a summer. And then, oh, it starts all over again.
Yeah.
And, you know, working for an orchestra, it's that same mm-hmm. calendar. And, you know, we have 7 concerts a year, and same thing with chorus. So everything is just going in that same pattern. And sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, we have to do this again.
Yep.
and it's trying to find that motivation to do it again. But then I know in that moment when we're putting on those concerts, I'm like, oh, this is why we do it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really fulfilling. It's just leading up to that. It's like, oh my gosh. So do you guys ever feel that way?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Okay, good.
We're like, are you kidding me? We have to go to rehearsal tonight? Like, and not, that's not really for backbeat, but like for, sorry, Dr. Romance. Yeah. For like classical chorus, sometimes I'm just like, man, I don't want to go.
Right.
But once me, I'm there, yeah.
Backbeat, chorus, Abilene, yeah. Anything else.
Hey, it's okay. Sometimes I feel that way about backbeat. Oh, I'm like, sure, oh yeah. My gosh.
Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh. When I get there, most of the time, it's like, I enjoy the rehearsals, right. And like I need it. And just being like after a school day, coming in and like being the student,
mm-hmm.
it's nice. And I have like a lot more empathy and I understand where Dr. Romines is coming from. And like, it's kind of like my turn to study him too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's fun most of the time.
yeah, there's always,
but no, yeah. Every now and then. Every time we're like, we have to sing the Messiah again. Yeah. But oh, at the end of the day,
that's everybody,
it's always
by the
like,
end of it.
Yeah, I'm so glad we actually did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something that I like to do is, well, first of all, I want to mention that back when we interviewed Mr. Harden, that was something he mentioned is like, it's important to, well, first of all, it's important to continue performing, right?
Right.
In regards to that specifically. And you know, for him, like, he said he would always be like, oh man, got to go to rehearsal. And then he gets there and he's going mm-hmm. and he's like, oh yeah, this is why I do it. Right. But another thing that I do is like, I think it's so healthy to just, I like to close my eyes and just picture like those, everybody has those specific moments throughout their time where they really experience the power of like music or like an experience that came through music and those kind of things. And it's just like reliving those, you know, and, or maybe, I have certain songs that we performed that were really special to me mm-hmm. or songs that I just associate with specific memories and just listening to those, closing my eyes, picturing those moments. It's like, just as a reminder of like, okay, well, why am I here?
Yeah.
Right. Why am I doing this? And it's just kind of, you know, kind of reminds you of like kind of your sense of purpose,
right.
You know, why you're doing it. And it's a lot easier to have purpose behind passion, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a helpful
thing.
Yeah,
and like that even happened like at the Hawaii trip. Almost mm-hmm. every time I was like, now we have to perform.
Yeah.
But every performance that we had, there was like a special moment.
Right.
Yeah. And that made it worth it. Like at Pearl Harbor, we got to sing for the veteran mm-hmm. and at the church, we just got to sing in the choir loft and then just seeing Dr. Romines get really emotional at the mall.
Man, yeah. I love him so much.
And that was just like nothing happened to us, but just seeing like him and all of his like former students, like watch him and adore him.
Well, witnessing the fruit of his, well, and he's done. Yeah.
You I can't remember. Have you seen Avatar: Last Airbender?
No,
have not.
We have not.
Okay. Oh my gosh. You guys need to watch it. But
we will.
In those moments. So there's like a scene where you see the current Avatar and then all the other Avatars before him.
Yeah.
And so in those moments watching Dr. Romines and his students, it's like I saw him and then all of his students behind him. And I ultimately, you know, I think that's what we all want to have being music educators or just musicians in general. We want to plant those seeds and we want to make a difference. And so seeing all those people who haven't seen him in years still come by and give him a hug and him get so emotional. I started crying.
I was like, I
can't look at you right now.
Yeah.
But that's something that I definitely aspired to have. It's like, I want to make an impact like that.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the best mindsets to have. And like as a music educator, it's like I feel like it's so easy to think of yourself as like, okay, here I am teaching someone how to do something.
Right.
Which you are. But really what you're doing is you're feeding them
right
for like their soul, you know, because that's why we do music. And so it's like, you're teaching a student like how they can do something better. And that is such an integral part of teaching music, you know, and anything else. But like what's so special about music and just the arts in general is that the stuff you're learning is the stuff that's also like making you grow, you know, like actually like helping you emotionally, spiritually, mentally. It's like if you could just learn stuff. It's like if you could learn how to make a dish by eating it. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I think I wish I could do that because I can't cook.
Oh, man.
But anyways, I don't know if that's the best analogy, but.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really satisfying. And I know, Kara, you can attest to this too. Whenever you see your students really start to get something, because sometimes you question yourself, you're like, can I do this? Like, am I even knowledgeable enough to teach this? But then when your kids get it and you see that excitement in their face, like I've had so many different students when I teach lessons and they have a note that they just can't hit. And I'm like, squat. And they look at me, they're like, what?
Yep.
I'm like, I want you to squat. Like, like you're working out squat. And they just look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, just do it. And they do it. The note sounds great. Yep. And they look at me so shocked. They're like, how did that happen? I'm like, just because. You tell them like why, but I just love seeing that excitement.
Yeah.
They're
like,
oh my gosh, I did it. I sound so good. I'm like, yes, you do. And I only told you to squat, you know. And a lot of the time, I just tell them you have to get out of your own way because you're so stressed out that, oh, the song is too hard. I can't do this or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I want you to focus on something else, like squatting or pretending to lift the piano or doing a wall sit
mindset.
Or throwing a ball, because you're focused on something else and you're allowing your body to do what it can do, which is sing. So it's always fun getting to see them do that.
Yeah. It's like it all goes back to it's like a legacy. Like at HSU, we always talk about, you know, when we're like recruiting and kind of talking about like, you know, what we're passionate about as a school and everything. It's like, okay, legacy is a big thing, because what is legacy? Well, it's ultimately like something that is going to outlive you, right? It's like, what are you doing now that's going to live longer than you ever will? And it's like, as a teacher, as someone that makes music or as a composer, you're creating something either in someone else or just out in the world that is going to live past you. And that's ultimately the goal, because like you're working towards creating something that is so much greater and bigger than you. And like, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but like for me personally, I think that's ultimately kind of why we all end up doing music, is because you experience something that's like greater than you. Like it's like all encompassing. Like for me, like I think I talked about this in like episode 2 or 3. You know, first time I ever really saw like my high school choir perform before I was even in it. Like that was such a cool moment for me. It was to like the curtain opens and you see 200 students, boom, and they all just start singing. It was even like pop music. Like it wasn't even like, you know, classical choral music, but it was just such a cool experience to see something so great and beautiful, like happening because of all these different people. And it's like, that's ultimately why we do it. You're creating something that's going to outlive you. And that's something to work towards.
Yeah. That's why I loved the Allstate process so much. Cause I mean, in Clyde, we did choir music, you know, the typical Latin piece and English and whatnot, but then doing the Allstate process and seeing the crazy rep that we would do. I was like, what is this? This is insane. And then getting to sing with all these people that I've never met before. And it sounded incredible. And then eventually making it into the small school Allstate choir. And it was just unreal because we all showed up with the same passion for singing. And then, of course, Zee Randall Stroop is incredible. But it was just, we were all these different people coming together and just making some incredible music. And that really defined it for me and was like, yep, I can't live without music. This is just so important to me.
That's something that I'm surprised we actually haven't mentioned. Well, I'm sure we've mentioned it, but like, I just have to say this, like, if you are listening to this and you are involved in music in some way, or you're a music teacher and you've somehow never been to TMEA or like your state music convention, educators convention, you need to go.
You have to go.
And like basically what you just described, like having all those people there, it's just like so inspiring. Like, like my first year,
life changing.
Yeah.
And it, I made the women's choir my senior year, and like something about like a room full of women singing. It was like one of the most empowering things like I've ever experienced in my life. And I don't think I'll ever experience something like that again. It was just amazing. And even like not even the performing aspect, but just being surrounded by music educators from all over the state is also just like really comforting and also empowering. Like, we're all here to within the same goal, and that's like to better our teaching.
Right.
Yeah. And that's not like, don't be intimidated by it. Like, it's easy to go in there and like kind of be intimidated and be like, oh my gosh, there are all these people that know all this stuff, like probably way more than me. But it's like, oh no, this is where you need to be though.
Yeah.
Surround yourself.
Like,
with
I wonder
what you
how
become.
Many years like combined of like all the people at like attend TMEA, like how many years of like teaching experience they have.
Yeah.
That'd just be a cool survey question.
I know. I bet they have that info somewhere, I feel like, but
no, I haven't been to TMEA in the past couple years just because of timing.
Yeah.
Whenever I did go, I just loved it. Mm-hmm. It was like the perfect place for a music nerd.
Yeah.
Just show up in music everywhere. And, you know, going to the gift shop or anything and go looking at, you know, let me get some vocal books. Let me get some of this. And it's just, you get so excited. And then going to different workshops and just learning about a whole lot more than you ever anticipated. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's so good for the soul going to TMEA. Yeah. So.
And as a composer for me, oh my gosh, like, I think I have like kind of an interesting perspective as a composer because I'm not really going there to learn like techniques and stuff, but I'm going there like truly just to like be inspired and to be motivated and to like see all the people that are my teammates. Right. And it's just like, oh, this is so cool. Like, I want to do this for these people. That's so cool. So if there are any composers listening, and you've never been, you need to go. Everybody needs to go.
Oh, yeah.
End of story.
Everyone needs to go, period. Done.
And it makes me sad because, like, in high school, I wasn't even familiar with Allstate. I mean, people did Allstate in my choir, but, I mean, I didn't join choir till my junior year, and I didn't do varsity till my senior year. So, like, I wasn't, you know, around a bunch of people that were doing it. And so, it wasn't until my freshman year of college that I, you know, y'all took me in. And it was, it was very, very eye-opening. The world got much, the music world got much bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yet smaller.
But yet smaller at the same time,
it's like, there's so many connections.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So you do private voice lessons.
Yes.
I mean, obviously you're doing all this other stuff, so you don't have like a crap ton of voice students, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But,
no.
What kind of like age group
do you... Yeah, that was my question.
Oh, okay, yeah. What kind of age group do you primarily, or maybe not primarily, but... variety of ages do you teach?
I initially advertised that I was just going to teach like 10 to 18 year olds. I'm so used to high school kids. Mm-hmm. And I know that age also includes junior high and younger, but because that's also when their voice starts to come in a little bit. It's easier to start training them. I did make an exception for like one kid. She was 8 when I started with her, but she was pretty cool. And I started teaching her how to read music and doing solfege and all that stuff. But yeah, I mainly have high school kids, like 16, 17 year olds that want to do musical theater. There have been a couple that they were doing the Allstate process. And so I would help them with that. But yeah, I currently, well, not currently because I'm not teaching right now for summer, but this past school year I had 5 students, which was probably about more than I could handle. And then I also, I did, so it's funny, I made an exception in terms of the younger side and I made an exception in terms of the older side because mm-hmm. I have a student who's 28 or 29 mm-hmm. and he's in backbeat. And so I definitely kind of pushed him into the deep end of things because he said he wanted to be serious about music. I said, okay, if you want to be serious, then you have to be involved. Like there's no uh-huh. question about mm-hmm. that. So audition for the group. If you get in it, you're going to be surrounded by other vocalists. And so that's kind of what I try to do in terms of being a voice teacher is obviously I want to work on their technique and their vocal health, but I want to make sure that if it's something they're serious about, that they get involved. And because that's the big key. So
yeah. What do you find is like, I mean, this can be you kind of talked a little bit about this a second ago, but I mean, this could be like physically, technically, like mm-hmm. with their voice or you know, just mindset wise. I mean, do you ever find any like patterns across your different students or maybe not? Cause I'm sure they're all coming from a different background of experience and everything yeah. about kind of what they're needing to mainly focus on changing or improving.
Right. So, I mean, I have, let's see, out of the 4 older ones that I had, there are 2 pairs that are really similar. So I have one that they're pretty confident, which is great. And they're hardworking and they overanalyze everything. Mm-hmm. And they kind of remind me of myself and because they want everything to be perfect. I'm like, it's not going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not because at the end of the day, you're making music. I don't care if your voice cracks. I don't care if you say the wrong word. I don't care if you sing the wrong note, but if you put that emotion behind it and you are just feeling every word and you're telling that story, at the end of the day, that's what matters. Obviously, you need to sing healthily, but like, I'm not going to be upset about like, oh, you were flat on this one note for like a second, you know? But they're very hard workers and, sometimes they get in their own way. And that's something that I see in common with my other pair is that they immediately come in with a mindset of, oh, the song is hard. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's why you can't do it because you've already told yourself you can't. Mm-hmm. And they look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, you have just planted that negative seed saying the song is hard. I can't sing it. So you can't do it. And now we have to retrain that. That's why I'm going to have them do silly things like squatting or trying to take their mind off of the difficult part and do something else with their body to get that focus on. And then they sing it just fine. And I'm like, well, so what changed? Well, I was doing something else. Exactly. You the hard part of the song is no longer mm-hmm. hard. Now, do we still need to work on it? Of course. But you achieved that goal that you didn't think you could.
Yeah.
And they also remind me of myself too whenever I was younger because there were tons of songs that I would have and I'm like, that's just too difficult. I can't do this. And but then seeing them achieve like over seeing them accomplish it and they just seem so proud and happy. I'm like, good. Like you came in thinking you couldn't sing the song and you're singing it. Now we can finally take it to that next level and like bring the musicality in it. Like you got the notes and the rhythms and, but now we can really start making music and having fun. So that's what I love about voice lessons is just each kid is so different. Mm-hmm. And then I just try to make it work with them. At one point I had a boy who did sports and I know nothing about sports, absolutely nothing. So I usually try to start the first voice lesson by asking them their hobbies. And he was like, oh, I played football and basketball. And I'm like, oh gosh, okay. How am I going to relate to you? But it worked because there were sometimes, you know, teaching about posture and getting your diaphragm engaged. Yeah, I'm like, show me, how would you get in position for like a football stance or something? Mm-hmm. And he'd show me, I'm like, why do you have to get like that? Well, because if I get tackled, I won't get hurt because mm-hmm. everything is like my core is engaged. I'm really grounded. No one can knock me over. I said, cool. So as a singer, you kind of have to be in a position to where someone can't knock you over because you need to be so grounded and your mm-hmm. core needs to be engaged.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, okay. And so I that's what I love to do is just find the common ground between singing and what they normally do in their day-to-day life. So that way when they leave the voice lesson, they can you know, if they're working out or they're playing their sport or they're doing their hobby, they're like, oh, Soraya said that whenever I was in this position that it's important for singing. And now they can kind of like put those things together, because people don't realize that singing is a very physical thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It involves your entire body. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I try to focus on a lot. So
I feel like the kind of the theme that I'm kind of noticing throughout this whole conversation we've had is that like everything goes back to like your mindset.
Exactly.
And like whether it comes to like what you were just saying, like whether you believe you can do something well or whether you have a mindset of being open to going and you know, learning more, you know, going to TMEA or, you know, being inspired, that kind of thing, or making sure you get that time for yourself and that rest and everything. And it's like what you're saying about being grounded, to branch off of there. It's like you have to be grounded mentally and emotionally and spiritually so that everything else you do, you know,
and you have to make sure and do it for the right reason.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke with Susie Rocket. She had like a little presentation that she had to do, and she talked about performing, but giving it to God at the same time, because being musicians, we can be hard about, oh, it's about me. Mm-hmm. It's all about me. And I loved her presentation about it, because that is a struggle. That's something that we struggle with for a long time. Mm-hmm. And for me, a lot of my reason for doing what I do is because I just want to be impactful somehow. You know, I say this prayer over myself every time I perform, and I've said it over Backbeat before, but just praying that whenever the audience sees them, that they see God, and whenever the audience hears them, that they hear God. Mm-hmm. Like that's huge. My focus. Because I don't care. Like, I want to do well, but I just want to be impactful somehow, because at the end of the day, you don't know who's going to be in the audience. You don't know what type of day that they just had or what news that they received. And your song or your performance or the way your face lights up on stage because you just love singing so much, or you don't know how that could impact someone. Mm-hmm. And that's what they take home and just instantly makes their day better. And that's what music is. So just obviously being grounded and you know, mentally and spiritually and physically, and taking that time to rest because you need that, but also knowing what you're doing it for. Because if you're doing it for a good reason, then it's easier to come back and keep doing it over and over again. If you're focused on yourself, if you're going to have a bad performance, it's going to be really hard for you to get back up on your feet and do it again, because you're going to be, you know, critiquing, oh my gosh, I did that wrong. I sounded horrible. If you're doing it for, you know, another purpose, it doesn't matter if you mess up, you know. So that's my big thing about why I do what I do.
Oh, no, that's great. It's when you walk onto a stage and you're performing, you got to remind yourself that you are giving something to the audience.
Exactly.
You shouldn't go out there seeking something from the audience to give to you. I mean, that's nice, right? If they respond well.
Right? Yeah, it's like we all love applause, but that's not the main reason.
Yeah. I can relate to that too, as you know, as a composer too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many times, like I have to constantly remind myself, like, okay, I'm working on this piece of music and I want it to be good so that it can speak to somebody.
Right.
Not so that it becomes a super successful piece and then everybody's like, oh, this guy's so good. Oh, you know, well, that'd be nice. But like, that's not why I'm doing it, you know? And I have to constantly remind myself that, because it's like, as humans, it's so easy to just, from the moment we're born, we're crying for stuff for ourselves. You know, that's just in our nature, right? And that's just the way it is. So it's hard to go against that natural inclination, but ultimately, like, that's what brings the most fulfillment is doing it, not for you, but for someone else.
And even if it's just that one person that loves that piece, it's still successful.
Yep.
And like, the big memory that comes to my mind is when you wrote the prayer that Dr. Wright would.
Oh yeah, farewell.
Farewell.
Invocation.
Yes, invocation. And oh my gosh, when you asked me to conduct that, I was like, oh gosh. But it was honestly the biggest privilege that you could have even asked me to do it. I was so nervous, and obviously because Dr. Wright is a conductor, and I was worried he was going to judge me. But that piece was just incredible. And having, again, like a moment where a bunch of musicians are on stage singing, and we all have this one goal, which is just that outpour of love for this person that we've known for so long. But it was such an emotional thing, being up there conducting it, but also mm-hmm. seeing everybody's faces, and mm-hmm. we're all just crying. So, I mean, that was an extremely successful yeah. piece, and it's in our hearts, you yeah. know? And so it's like, you made a difference in many people's lives with that piece. And then you may do another piece that makes a difference in one. Mm-hmm. Either way, it's still really successful. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, first yeah. of all. And I think another thing about that too, that I should add, is that I have the recording of yeah. when we did that. And to give a little bit more context, I mean, it was like the whole room singing it.
Yeah.
And we as the choir had maybe read through it a few times. We'd done like one little private rehearsal yeah. without him knowing. And then everybody else in the room was literally sight reading it.
Right.
And you listen to the recording. No, it's not a perfect performance at all. I mean, yeah. you can definitely hear stuff in there, right? yeah. And we needed Jessica to kind of accompany, even though it was an a cappella piece. And, you yeah. know, but, and yet for a while, I chose not to like post it, because I thought, well, it's not a professional recording. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I realized, no, but this is like the essence of the, right. this is it, right? Yeah. It's vulnerable, but it's just so true and genuine. And it's, yeah, to this day, it might be my favorite live recording I have of mm-hmm. a piece of mine, but yeah. yeah, just kind of going back to why you're doing it, yeah. you know, like it wasn't a perfect performance, but it didn't have to be.
No, and it was impactful. And that's something that mm-hmm. people are going to remember for a long time.
Yeah.
And especially the one that it was for. He's going to remember that for the rest of his life.
That's right. Yeah, so. For sure. It was a great, great moment for everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess one thing that I would want to add is being a musician, try to be really open-minded and put yourself in kind of in uncomfortable positions in terms yes. of growing and learning. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I started off with just having a performing background from high school and then having an education background. And now my job has nothing to do with any of those things. And I'm learning a lot about advertising and marketing, like I said earlier, which at the end of the day, all that stuff is going to be yeah. very valuable, especially if I'm wanting to continue being a, you know, like a professional vocalist, you know, which that's a goal that I'm hoping to have by having this recital and then maybe auditioning for the APO and for chorus. But, you know, learning those skills are extremely important because, I mean, you're a composer and you're a music ed, you're a teacher, and here you are doing a podcast and you're learning how to edit and how to yeah. advertise and market yourselves. And that is so important. And if anything I've learned during this bossless time at the APO is it's really hard to find that perfect person who has a music background mm-hmm. and has like the business side of things. Mm-hmm. So go and be that person if you can. Obviously, don't stress yourself out, but if you're wondering, should I have some experience in advertising or something? Yes, go do it, because mm-hmm. you may need to market yourself for something. You may need to advertise for a concert mm-hmm. or for, you know, just for anything. So I just strongly encourage you be open-minded and just try new things, and because you're going to be very happy about it. I know a goal that I have in the future is to maybe start up like some voice studio of my own or, yeah. And if I didn't work at the APO, I wouldn't know how to do a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it would give me the foundation that I need to be able to do those things. Yeah. So go out there, try new things, and you'll be really glad you did.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So
cool. I've heard, like, you're not the first person like on our podcast to say something like that, you know, like. Everybody, I've heard like Brady yeah. say something about just being like well versed,
yeah,
you know,
because Abigail was a performance major, and then here she is being an executive yep. director for an organization. Like yeah. you never know. That's the other thing, you don't know what other job opportunities might come your way, and you may not be in there for your entire life, but you'll be there for a season, and that season will be mm-hmm. important for that growth that you'll have in the future. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And for me as an admissions counselor at a college yep. recruiting yeah. students, well, that's helped me a lot because, you know, you have to send out emails to people mm-hmm. and mailing lists and stuff. And well, I do that for my own music business as yep. well now. Right. And yeah. so there's a lot of overlap there, and also just talking to people. Yeah, that's right. something that's helped me a lot. So yeah, that's kind of a mindset of being open and willing right. to do something new.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we wrap this up, Soraya, I remember you recently saying that as of like this season, you're not doing a whole lot of, you're not really taking new
correct.
Voice students, correct? Yeah. Do you have any plans of doing that in the future? I know there's, always
so hard to tell. It depends. I need to check with my students that I had in the spring mm-hmm. first to see if they're wanting to continue with me. Mm-hmm. If so, then I will try to keep teaching. And if there's any openings, then I will gladly take them. Mm-hmm. I have a Facebook page. It's called Soraya's Vocal Studio. You can find that and message me. You can also email me at soraya.p.music@gmail.com. And then if you have any questions about Backbeat, you can email me at soraya@chorusabilene.org. I have a bunch of emails. But yeah, right now I'm in Chicago. So if you guys don't have anything to do July 28th through the 31st, you can come over to McMurray and see me in Chicago. And then planning on doing my recital with the Heavenly Rest concert series on November 13th. So
cool. All yeah. right. Yay. Well, yeah. So that's how you can reach out, connect with Soraya if you want to. We highly encourage that. Soraya, thank you so much yeah. for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Well, that does it for this week's episode. That was a wonderful conversation we had with Soraya. We kind of went back and listened to it, and we kind of noticed that the overall kind of theme that we were talking about throughout that whole conversation was ways that you can ground yourself so that you can be more confident going into whichever area of music education you do, whether it's private lessons, you're in the classroom, or you know, you're a church musician, performer, something like that. So just to kind of sum those up in three different points, the first one being that you got to be open to new things, new experiences. No matter how many years you've been doing this, it's not too late to try something new. And that's going to ground you in a way that, it grounds you with experience and new abilities. And, you know, even if you do a little bit of something new, that's going to prepare you for something more later on down the road. So that's just a way that you can be grounded in what you've experienced and what you have learned for when you're going forward and learning new things. Now, with that being said, while you do want to go and get a lot of different opportunities and a lot of experiences that you're able to do, you don't want to overcommit yourself, and you don't want to do too much to where you end up getting burnt out, which leads us to our next point.
Taking time to rest and saying no to different opportunities. That's definitely something that I struggled with, and also just like living in the present. Both of those things really ground you mentally and physically, and will ultimately, you'll get your best work from resting.
That's right. Best work comes from rest work. And you'll remember, Soraya mentioned that, you know, she's always doing so much. And, recently she had to say no to, helping, direct the musical, at Clyde, just because, you know, she had so much going on and something had to go. And so that's what she had to do. And then finally, the last point is kind of a good one to come back to after you've done the first two points, but it's also what you want to start with. So it's kind of the beginning and the end. It's kind of like a cycle, and that is remembering your purpose, your why, reminding yourself why you do what you do. It's so, so important, because ultimately, you know, everything you do comes from that, and your purpose comes from the heart. Everything you do flows from your heart. So that's why it's always important to help to ground yourself in your purpose and reminding yourself why you get up in the morning every day and why you do music and how you are helping create something that is much greater than yourself or for anybody else.
So that pretty much sums up the rest of our episode. If you could please like, subscribe, follow our podcast on whatever platform you listen on, and preferably, you know, rate us some 5 stars.
Wink, wink.
That just really helps us get our podcast more exposed to other people. And yeah.
Yeah, and one other thing, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, If you are on my mailing list, this past week, I actually sent out a survey about this podcast. It was in the newsletter, but I also sent out a separate email about it as well. If for some reason you don't remember getting it, just check your junk or spam mail. A lot of times, I think my emails actually end up going there. But it's just a short anonymous survey. We want to hear from you what you think of the podcast so far. We didn't really get to talk about and celebrate that we did reach 10 episodes, which is a really cool thing, something we're really proud of. But we are excited to keep going and to grow and maybe change a few things depending on what y'all think. We just want to make this the best kind of podcast that it can be for y'all. So again, just go to my see what my recent emails are, and you should be able to find that. And if you're not on my mailing list, you can join that on my website, and you can fill out that survey as well. And finally, after we were just kind of talking about, remembering your purpose, and that it's not always about having the perfect performance, but having, again, what comes from your heart, having heart in the performance, and ultimately doing this for other people, for something greater than ourselves. And since we kind of talked about a good example of that being that performance of Farewell, it's a piece that I had written on behalf of the entire choir at Hardin Simmons for Dr. Wright, one of our past choir directors. We thought it'd be kind of a nice way to end this episode with that recording that we talked about. So we want to say thanks again for listening, and enjoy this little recording of when we perform this. And again, remember why you do what you do, because ultimately we do this for something that is much, much greater than our own personal gain.